Blog Talk Radio.
Okay. All right. So the woman just said the audience should think that you are nude. Okay, this is a something that I'm sharing on Facebook. I'm doing this before my intro. This woman is telling these 10-year-old girls, it's called Society Needs to Stop Sexualizing Children.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely incredible. I mean, you know, we know about beauty pageants and everything else, and she's got these little girls dancing around in their underwear and calling attention to their breasts and their crotches and stuff like that. Okay. So,
oh, my God.
This is really horrible, and it's really shocking, which is why I wanted to do this, but my sound is just awful. My sound is awful, so probably nobody could hear what I was just playing. I'm going to play... you guys all know me from Facebook, and I'm doing everything out of order tonight because I'm just so shocked and horrified. I want to show everybody everything. Let me play. Okay, I'm just going to start with my intro. Good evening, and welcome to Return of the Secret Seraph. I am incredibly blessed because tonight's show features two amazing activists, Anne Winslow and Francesca Mata Banfield, whom I'd also like to thank for the intro music, which I haven't played yet. It's written and performed by a mutual Facebook friend of ours, Shilla Alam. Shilla, right? Is that correct?
Yeah.
I'll hit her up on Facebook. She's a friend of mine also, you know, just sort of very superficially, but we know each other, and I'll tell her thanks for the wonderful song. I've always wondered who this song was, and I've listened to Francesca's show and watched it, and Francesca does videos, which, you know, I'm still in the Stone Age here. I love you both. I'm so glad you called in. Wow, what an amazing comeback show here for me. Francesca's written a book called Punish for Protecting, the Injustice System, the Family Court. It's a very accessible book. Any of you who have been through custody court or you've had your kids abducted by CPS, and I'm sure there's a lot of you out there, I'm sure there's a lot of you out there. I've come to know more and more in the years that I've been doing this. If you get this book, you will see your story. You will see some things that are just incredibly familiar. You're gonna read it, and you're gonna say, I mean, Francesca, I've read this book out loud to people, and they're like, Valerie, wow,
aww,
that's your story. That happened to you. That exact same thing happened to you. I can't believe it happened to this woman too. Wow, that happened to you too. You're going to see
mm-hmm.
your story in this book. You're going to feel like she was walking around, shadowing you, watching you, because you're going to feel like you've been through that. This is your soul sister right here wrote this book, Punish for Protecting the Injustice System of the Family
mm-hmm.
Court. I'm so excited. I'm so excited to meet you because, this is like advocacy, working with women that have lost their children to their abusers and their batterers is just very taxing, very draining. And so... when I found out you existed, Francesca, I have to just say that it was like, oh my God, it was like a drink of cool water from a stream, from a fountain. I was just so thrilled that you're. I'm just so glad you exist. My God.
Aww, I feel the same about you.
So, anyways, okay, and I'd also like to introduce Anne Winslow. I'm not going to say your whole entire name because I'm not sure about the pronunciation, but. But first of all, I've known about your page for quite some time on Facebook, and being an incest survivor, I mean, I come from a family where I've had to keep horrible secrets about things that have gone on in my childhood, things that a lot of times that the things that happen to you are so unfathomable to a little child that you can't even, there's no frame of reference. You simply do not have any frame of reference to understand. So a lot of times you just push these things down and don't even think about them. And then something will happen. It's called triggering, and you'll remember something. You won't understand. You'll feel really yucky about something. Maybe you stop eating. This is what happened to me when I was a teenager. I was borderline anorexic. My younger sister went through bulimia because what happened was my dad basically went from one of us to the next, and we were a certain age. And the younger one came along, he went from one to the next to the next to the next. And what you find out when you get to a certain age in a society as a female is you start looking around and you realize that you run into men in society who treat grown women like this. They play us off against each other. And especially if we're not aware of what that kind of victimization is going on in our lives, we're not aware, we will continue to play these little hostile, mean games against each other. We will not work together. We will look at life as some kind of a competition instead of working together. So this is the kind of thing where we're all healing. A lot of us are healing from sexual abuses that we've suffered as little children. And where family court injustice comes in is we need to recognize that we have to put our feet down and we need to stop the situation. We need to stop this unhealthy way of relating. We need to stop unhealthy competition. We need to stop this pattern of behavior where women are fighting against each other because, you know, subconsciously we're still living in the situation where men are playing us off against each other because that was what Daddy did. Daddy had his favorites and we weren't the favorite. Maybe they were afraid we were going to tell. When I got into puberty, both my parents knew what had happened and they did not want to tell me where babies came from because they didn't want to say anything that might remind me of something inappropriate that happened to me when I was little. So I was taught that sex was bad. I was taught that it was something that we don't talk about. When I had my first boyfriend, I got sent away to live with my aunt out of state. And this is something that to this day I can't talk to my mother about. Okay, she's in her 80s. And, you know, I can't. And so there are so many family secrets that a lot of us cannot talk about, but we have to talk about it. We have to talk about it. We have to heal for ourselves. We have to heal for our children. And then the third thing that I'd like to say is that when my daughter came home from parent time, this is a family pattern that where we become attracted to men that maybe, you know, maybe they're similar to our father in some way that's very unhealthy. Okay, and I'm not saying that this is true for every dysfunctional relationship where a woman might get married to a batterer or end up with the father of her children being someone who's physically abusive. I'm not saying that's always the case that this is a repeat pattern. But everyone who within the sound of my voice, I'd like you to open your minds to the possibility that you are repeating a family pattern of a man that you learned to love who had these unhealthy behaviors.
Okay. That was my situation. I went into my ex-husband was a batterer, and he kidnapped my older four children.
Oh, my God. Okay. So you've been through it with the family court too, haven't you?
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So let me just quickly introduce someone. I hope to have her on the show someday. It's Lori Handrahan. Dr. Lori Handrahan wrote a book called Epidemic. I took my eyes off the board for a minute, so I'm going to go and look and see if someone else has called in. No, nobody has. Thank goodness. This is like the one night where I kind of don't want anyone else to call in right away because I have so much to talk about, the two of you. Oh, my goodness. She wrote a book called Epidemic. Now, when I was going through all the stuff with my daughter in family court, I couldn't understand why no one would help us. I could not understand why we couldn't get any sane, competent legal advice from anyone. I really didn't understand that. I didn't understand why we were living at the poverty level and her father was gainfully employed and no one would help us get child support from him. Well, it's like crazy-making behavior. You go apply for food stamps, and they say in order for you to qualify, you need to sue your ex-husband for child support, right? Or you need to prove that you are trying to do that. That's how one woman actually ended up with her abuser back in her life. He didn't know that he was the father of her child, and all of a sudden, because she had to locate him or something like that in order to get food stamps, suddenly he was back in her life and victimizing her child then after that. So that's a situation. But so I was online on the internet looking up anyone who might have had similar stories to me, and this was because, I mean, Facebook has been a really helpful, useful tool in many ways for me and the women that I have been advocating for since 2015, because we can connect with each other. I mean, one of the most horrible things is to have your child taken and then become a pariah in your community. With all the people that you know in real life, in the flesh, suddenly stop talking to you because they all think that you did something to deserve what happened to you. Nobody thinks for one minute that maybe the judge is doing something he shouldn't be doing. Lori Handrahan explains it in her book, Epidemic. She was online before I knew that I could find these people on Facebook, which I haven't been able to find her on Facebook yet, but I was looking at these people had web pages, and I would read about their stories. I couldn't believe what I was reading, and I would read and I would read, and then the page would get shut down. I'd try to email these women. I could not find them. I'd just like to say that thanks to Lori Handrahan's research, I was able to recognize some of the things that were going on when my daughter would come home from parent time with her dad. When she lived with him briefly when she was 4 years old. She lived with him for a year, and I went to visit her, and they had this little game that they played where she would be sticking her finger down her throat, and I didn't know what that was. I didn't know what that was for years. I didn't know what was going on. And I think I know what it is now, but it's not the kind of game that a dad is supposed to play with his little girl, okay?
Mm-hmm.
One day she came home, oh my God, we battled, and I ended up with a chronic kidney condition from trying to protect my daughter and driving out there and just, you know, I did horrible things to my health, just ruined it. She came home with the date rape drug in her bag, and I have to say that it was thanks to Lori Handrahan that I figured that I knew what that was, that I could figure out, you know, she never had a toothache. She told me that he never took her to the dentist. Why does she have codeine Tylenol in her bag? You know, so again, that's the Lori Handrahan connection with this book Epidemic. And finally, I'd just like to say, the final thing that I'm really interested in doing is calling out the National Organization for Women, okay? I am really angry and offended by their behavior. I have a story to tell about the president of my local chapter of NOW and how I met her in a panel discussion on Palm Sunday at a local production of When We Were Young and Unafraid. And this is a play about the feminist movement at the end of the 60s and the beginning of the 70s. It takes place in a domestic violence shelter that a woman is running out of her home. Okay, was amazing. It's an amazing play. Everyone should go see it. It's called When We Were Young and Unafraid. I was an usher and I participated in the panel discussion. And a woman who I won't name at this point, I might not even name her tonight, but I'm just going to bring this up because this is something that I'm going to be talking about week after week. I want people to start outing these chapter presidents of NOW because we can't. This woman is now running for assembly. While she acted like she was interested in the family court angle of perpetuation of domestic violence and victimization of women and children, and then she refused to meet with me. So we can't let these people continue to do this. I'm not here to talk about what a wonderful job NOW is doing. In fact, the same members of NOW who turn up for parades and photo ops have really failed women on a massive scale by refusing to stand up for those of us who continue to suffer victimization by our batterers in family court. That's the part of my intro that's written down. And since I started bringing her up, I found out that other women have also approached their chapter presidents of the local NOW, and they all get told, oh, contact the national office. You will be put on a donors list and added to the junk mail, and you will get hit up for money quarterly. And they do not care what you're going through. They do not care about women's issues. The National Organization for Women is a poser organization, and it needs to be ended. You need to end these poser organizations because they're not helping. okay?
I think they just want to help women in situations they know it can win and make them shine, and our situations won't.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's a lot of situations where I think you can pose for a picture. I mean, if you look at this woman,
mm-hmm.
she's running for state assembly now, so she's using her position as president of NOW as a springboard to get into politics. The thing is, you know, public service is not a limited monarchy in this country. When you run for public office, that this is not your opportunity to be queen for a day. This is not.
mm-hmm.
And
they
I
don't
want to
get their little white gloves dirty.
No, precisely. And so, you know, Francesca, this is one of the things that where you have to just kind of look back. I have to look back sometimes when I feel myself getting discouraged. I have to look back at 2015 when women were afraid to speak up. That they didn't want to, you know, they didn't want to talk about it on their wall because there were judges who were literally issuing gag orders, and women were getting penalized and being put in jail for talking about and getting fined for talking about their family court case right out on their page. So this is one of the things that we didn't used to be able to do. We had to talk about it in a secret group. Thank God for Facebook. We had secret groups, and so the women started telling their stories in the secret groups, because they couldn't do it out on their wall where everyone could see. And then you remember Shannon Baskin, who passed away last December under suspicious circumstances. Francesca, you remember her. She was in the middle of a Supreme Court case against the Georgia judge who had taken her daughter away and placed custody of her daughter with an ex-boyfriend. Who was not related to the family. Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely disgusting. Oh, hold on a second. Hey, Francesca, yeah!
Yes, I guess I was muted because I got kicked off and I came back in. And I guess I was muted.
Thank you
I'm
for
sorry.
Calling back. I was like, where are you? I called your name.
I was going to say, though, with the Shannon Baskin story, the media actually contacted
yeah.
me because they told me the story. And I was
yeah.
on the news in Georgia. And
yeah.
the other this whole past weekend, I was actually in West Virginia. You know, they're giving out gag orders in West Virginia like candy.
Yep.
And
yeah.
those people
yeah.
actually believe that they're legal. They actually believe that they're legal, and they're not legal. There's nothing legal
right.
about a gag order.
Right,
so.
Right. We find out in places like Florida that they don't record court hearings, you know. I mean, but they probably do, but they pretend that they don't. I know it's just simply astounding. And then they change the transcripts. Oh, there's a whole list of
mm-hmm.
things that they do. Just absolutely
mm-hmm.
incredible, all the stuff that they do. So
mm-hmm.
because this is my first, this is the old intro that I used to do for my show, The Secret Sarah, because when I was first asked to do this. Oh yeah. Let me follow sequentially. So we'll talk about all those things. And I just like to say it is our right as women to leave marriages that don't work for us, partnerships that endanger our lives, physical safety and sanity, and that of our children. It doesn't make sense for us to continue suffering, like having a baby is some kind of prison sentence that we deserve for being born female. Okay, this is the entire reason for me doing this blog talk show, week after week. This is the whole purpose for me doing this. And I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Raquel Oakey and Bobby Biesinger of World Integrity News Network, who first gave me this opportunity 2 years ago. And I'd just like to say how honored I am to be working with them once again. We don't agree on everything. We probably don't even vote the same. In fact, I know for a fact we don't vote the same. But I'm on their network because we can disagree politically without being disagreeable and still respect each other. In fact, they asked me to come back on, so I'm like, really? Okay, I will. Why not? Sure, I'd love to. Okay. So, and let me say my benediction is the blessing at the beginning of the show that I say. This is the thing I say at the beginning of my show every week. And now, because this show is designed to glorify God, we say to our Eternal Father, Thy kingdom come. And I'm going to deliver the very same introduction I did for my first Secret Seraph episode 2 years ago on World Integrity News Network.
Amen.
In a far-off land, in a far off land across the sea, in the home of those who gave us our law and our government, and gave unto us, unto all that were well affected, exceeding cause of comfort, especially when we beheld an established government, accompanied with peace and tranquility at home and abroad. We were also given a precious book to remind us of the redeeming love of our everlasting Father and the Son of Man. We have our traditions of mass education, efforts made to increase the public good, to teach our children by religious and learned discourse, where in some small way a child is given the opportunity to do good for another, so that we might see that when we are in the service of our fellow men, we are only in the service of our God. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And the light shineth in the darkness, and the darkness comprehendeth it not. With that said, let's begin the show. So, all right. This is absolutely amazing. I just love having both of you on my show. Let's start with Francesca. You know, I saw what you were doing in West Virginia, and I wanted to say, first of all, how much I admire you for all the hard work you're doing. And, you know, and I know you came on the show tonight to tell us a little bit about the last time you were on my radio show. Just tell us what's going on. Tell us what you've been doing lately. Just, you know, a few things.
Okay. So it's a great radio voice.
Pardon? Wait, what?
You have such a great radio voice. You have such a good radio voice. You really do.
thank you.
No, you really, really, really did. It's just a great voice. But I just want to say, since last time, I have been blown away. I've been inundated, and this past weekend with West Virginia, it was a little bit unique compared to when I go places. I've been out there before, and I've had both Ohio and West Virginia. I wasn't doing a protest other times. I was doing just like interviews, and I couldn't fit everybody. They were literally lined around the hallway trying to get into where I was doing the filming. This time, people come, but they seem to be more afraid, which I think they should be less afraid. Because we are seeing West Virginia getting cracked down. But I was able to meet a lot of new people. I did a lot of private interviews while there after the protesting. And I did get to get on Channel 3 News there, which was great, because normally their news there will not air anything that has to do with the corruption in West Virginia. So I felt like that was a very positive breakthrough. And, you know, I just feel like God does things the way he wants them done. It's not necessarily in our timeline. And it's not necessarily in the way we want things done or the way we think are the right way. I just trust my life in him when I go places. I trust when I don't go places that his hand is in it the way he wants it to work and the way he wants it to orchestrate.
Isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing? And it's the time. And it's just like in the Bible, in those stories in the Bible. But it's the time that you really think that nothing is moving. You know, that was one of the things that we really struggled with when I was doing my activism. And I do things a little differently than other people. Other people start organizations and associations and stuff like that. And I was sort of like, I had some very specific things that I wanted to do. So when I'm leading them, they move like a phantom. That's just kind of how we do it. We sort of call in and we don't say who we are. We don't say what organization we're with. We block our number and we say what city and state we're calling from. And that way nobody knows how to find us. But we move like a phantom like that. And that's just kind of how my team always worked when we were working. We would call in to court on the day someone had a court hearing, and we knew the judge was going to be breaking the law. We'd call in, you know, we would find out what the woman was being accused of. And sometimes, I mean, I even did it for men, too. We'd find out what the judge was getting ready to do, and we would call in and we would quote the statute that the judge was breaking, was violating. So, and we actually got more results than I even knew about at the time. I would have women call me up, contact me, not call me so much, but on Facebook a year later, and say, wow, yeah, my judge recused himself or herself or whatever. We had judges recusing themselves from the cases. That was about as far as we could get, though, Francesca. But, I mean, it's still a big deal that we had that. We had people that knew that they were doing the wrong thing. Let me just welcome this caller. Welcome, 860. Is this Elizabeth?
Yep.
All right, good. Yeah. Okay. Welcome to the show. I'm so happy. All right.
Yeah.
Let's hear from Anne a little bit. Anne, I just wanted to give you another chance to just talk a little bit about some of the stuff that you're doing. Most of what I see you making a lot of memes, and I've stolen a lot of them. it's not really stealing if your name is still on it, right?
No.
As long as your name
and
is on
it. And I make them to be used. That's why I do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want the message to get out there.
But I can tell you have quite an understanding, quite a background based on some of the things that I mean you managed to pack a pretty powerful punch into one or two sentences, and so, you know, just tell us a little bit about your experience. You've heard a little bit about mine. Tell us a little bit about yours.
I was sexually abused by my adoptive father.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, we're not sure when it started, but I have a recurring nightmare that started when I was about 18 months, 2 years old.
Right.
And it just progressed from there.
Yeah.
You know, rape, molestation, the whole gamut.
Right.
And I was kicked out of the house when they found out I was dating. My adoptive parents are white. And
okay.
I didn't know it at the time, but I found out that I'm biracial. I'm Indonesian and white.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was kicked out of the...
When you started dating... When
mm-hmm.
your sexuality started to become your own, was that an affront to these people? Was that something that they took as a personal violation, as something that you weren't allowed to explore and discuss?
They didn't want me dating. I had to always go on the sly saying that I was going to a friend's house or
mm-hmm.
we would meet up in a group where everybody
okay.
was pretty much paired off, but...
Right.
You know,
I was
sleeping at a friend's house or...
Mm-hmm. So, that's an important thing for women to do. When we've been abused, it's important for us to reclaim our sexuality, for us to say,
mm-hmm.
hey, you know what, it's okay. It's okay for me to enjoy sexual feelings. This is my body. It belongs to me. God gave it to me, and it's mine. And that when I was 23, that was when I first... You know, I went to therapy, and that was when, I mean, I didn't know that I had been abused, but I went to a kinesiologist, someone who is not licensed to practice in the United States, but he
mm-hmm.
was an alternative. He was an alternative practitioner. I do not like psychologists. I don't think they're good people. I don't think, you know, Sigmund Freud really violated, he sexually molested his own, you know, he's the father of American psychology, and he actually, like, molested his own profession because
mm-hmm.
he actually sold out to the men that were paying him to practice did not want their daughters to be under hypnosis talking about their violation, talking about how their fathers were molesting them. So he came up with this imaginary thing that little girls really want to be treated that way by their fathers, which
mm-hmm.
isn't true, but Sigmund Freud had to say that. So that's why the field of psychology was polluted by Sigmund Freud himself, who had to keep he had to tell lies so that these men who were raping their own daughters would keep paying his bills. So
mm-hmm.
So my kinesiologist said to me, what is it that you hope to gain from therapy? And I said to him, I want to feel like my body is my own. Right now I don't feel like it belongs to me, and I want to feel like it's mine. And that was the beginning of my healing process. So that was when you started to reclaim your sexuality, was when your parents started to get upset and angry with you. Is that how it worked?
No.
No.
I got kicked out of the house because my ex-husband, who I was dating at the time, was black. And
okay.
We got married, and he was extreme. He added physical abuse to the sexual abuse.
Right. Okay. Okay.
And after I left him, went through, like you said, the social services, we had to bring him into court for child support. And he told me, and I told him that, no, I didn't want to do that because he threatened to take the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the reasons that I left. And
right.
They said, no, that if you want benefits, you have to apply. And at that time, I had five kids, and I couldn't support five kids by myself.
Right.
So
right.
When it went to apply, and he kidnapped my older four kids after I had left him. And it wasn't until it was a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I dated after him. There were a couple of other men that I dated that weren't physically abusive, but I wasn't treated the way I should have been treated.
Right, right. Do you want to tell us, like, roughly around the time what year this was?
I left my husband in 93.
Okay.
And he kidnapped my children in 94.
Right, right. And do you know if any of your children were sexually abused by your husband or by anyone else?
They never said they were sexually abused, but one of my daughters almost died from physical abuse.
Okay, okay.
From him, and
he
abused them all, but there were two that, one of my daughters and my son, he physically abused more than the other two that he had taken.
Right, right, yeah. That some of them are favorites. I mean, I was not my dad's favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I was not daddy's favorite. His favorites were the younger girls. He used me as I was just a tool. He used me almost like an inanimate object, like you would use a doll or something. And he developed a finesse for the younger girls that came along. He developed a finesse with them, but he didn't. That wasn't how he treated me. So,
I was the outcast too. And I don't
know
whether
it
was because I was mixed race. And then when I found my parents, I found out that my dad was Jewish. And at my house, it was like people of color were, you know, the scourge of the earth. And the only thing, yeah, and Jews are the scourge of the earth. So I was,
yeah.
You know, I had a double whammy. And
Yeah, I mean, and you even find, even in the white families, you'll find like one kid that was born a different color. So you get colorism within the same family.
Right.
Like, you know, my mom was darker than her brothers and sisters, and so she has there's a lot of racism that happens even in a family when one kid, for some reason, is born a different color, just darker than the rest. And so, I mean, that's something that I need to write about. I'm gonna read a page. I just like to acknowledge Elizabeth who called in. Elizabeth and I both have Lori Handrahan's book Epidemic. You and I both have it. Did you read it cover to cover?
You know, I haven't finished it, but I'm reading it now. Yeah.
I know it's difficult because you know Lori Handrahan packs a lot of it. You know, it's almost like the Bible. I mean, you read it. And you're like, where is that verse? Where is that page? And you're like, I need to. You're praying because you find something. It's so useful. And you're, please God, let me find this page again. And you should, I just want to. So I'm torn between wanting to commit the whole book to memory, and I haven't read the whole book, trust me, and just reading it, and feeling slimy in places I cannot wash after reading it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you just can't. Franceschi, you need this book. I'm going to read you a passage from page 46. You know, she talks about who was trafficking infants and toddlers and how. I think, you know, Anne, you mentioned that your abuse started when you were about 18 months old. And
it was right around the time the adoption was finalized, not far from that. So I guess the state wasn't going to be in their house anymore and not checking up on me. So
right. So anything goes at that point, right? Anything goes.
Right.
What you find out, I mean, just as an aside, what you find out, what I found out with some of the women that I've worked with is that even when they have ER reports of the actual rape and penetration and blood and damage to these little children, the courts often will completely disregard them. And I know that I reported things in my own daughter's case. I reported things that were marked private by the court, and they refused to even address these issues. I drove all the way out there for 10 days. I drove because I couldn't afford a plane ticket. And when I got there, the judge refused to hear me. But here on page 46, Lori Handrahan has a passage called "Who is Trafficking Infants and Toddlers and How?" And Francesca, you need this book. As the research has established, the overwhelming majority of those involved in child rape are men, and many appear to be fathers. If the mother is not involved, and some mothers are, this means infants and toddlers would be trafficked by fathers who have secured access to their children. This is Lori Handrahan. I'm not saying that, mm-hmm. like, if you're a man and you're listening to the show, I'm not saying that all men are bad. I'm just saying that if you are using the systems that are in place, I might find a passage from later on in her book where she talks about how the legal profession is used to traffic children sexually. If you are a man who's exploiting the systems that are in place to give fathers supreme access to their children, then you are shaking hands with these men who are doing very, very bad, dangerous, and horrible things to children. So these are the men who are helping you get absolute unfettered access to your children. It's not just a gift. This is going to be like, if you believe in God, then this is going to be on your head someday. You're shaking hands with men who do horrible, horrible things with children. If you're exploiting the family courts and you're getting judgments from these judges to screw over your ex-wives and the mothers of your children, then this is something that you men need to know. Okay, so this means infants and toddlers would be trafficked by fathers who have secured access to their children. Family courts across the country are routinely giving fathers who are confirmed abusers and even registered sex offenders custody of young children. And then she asked a question. She has a reference for that. Is this a factor in infant toddler rape seen by investigators and online networks? That's a question mark. I'm going to stop reading right there. So, yeah, we know about Lisa Knight. Francesca, we both know who she is. We both have worked with her. Now and then, I guess we could drop names of like women that we know for a fact that they've been on the radio show. They've been trying to get help for their family court cases. And we know that they've had problems with, she was in Oklahoma and what they do is the judges permit the father to take the child across state lines. In my case, no evidence was ever presented that I was a bad parent. It was just allegations. There's something called turbo habeas. If you're a father and you want instant custody of your children, all you have to do is make two allegations and present them. Here in the state of New York, all you have to do is allege one of two things. The first thing is that mom is mentally incompetent and presents an immediate danger to the children. You don't have to prove it. You just have to allege it. You don't even have to pay a doctor to say that. You don't even have to pay a psychiatrist to say it. You don't even have to make the mom take tests. You don't have to make her do psych evals. You don't have to do anything. All you have to do is allege it. Anyone who's listening to the show, look up turbo habeas. Do a Google search for turbo habeas, and you will find this out, that it completely deprives custodial mothers. I've never seen it used by moms against dads. It's always used against moms. Turbo habeas completely deprives mothers of due process. The other thing that happens is the UCCJEA has a loophole in it called emergency jurisdiction. All you have to do to defeat subject matter jurisdiction in a case is incarcerate the custodial parent, and it's always the mom. The minute the mom is in jail, the child is considered abandoned. Subject matter jurisdiction no longer applies. The child can be given away to CPS like a free kitten or a free puppy, free to a good home. The child is no longer considered human. And I was gonna let you say something, Elizabeth. Go ahead. What have you found out from reading Lori's book? Did you ever get a hold of her? Did you ever get to talk to her?
You know, I tried to locate her, but I was unable to connect with her, but I certainly tried. I've been in touch with her over the years, and I certainly know that her daughter was trafficked up in, you know, up in North New England in Vermont. And that whole story unfolded in pretty much in front of the eyes of so many advocates, and there was there wasn't much anybody could do because the courts just they disregard the evidence, and they manipulate the proceedings. And of course, as you know, in the Linda Wigand case, which was quite famous here in Connecticut, the Attorney General's office produced a report called the Massimino Report, which basically confirmed that the sexual abuse had occurred with children, both John and Ben. And essentially, the judge sealed the report and refused to allow it to be presented to the court. So,
and that's what they do.
Things that happened, and she details, you know, she talks about the removal of evidence, the exclusion.
And Linda Wigand was put. She was put in prison for 20 years for attempted murder, even though she never even had a weapon in her hand.
Linda Wigand? Not Linda Wigand.
Pardon?
No, Linda Wigand was not in jail for 20 years.
Yeah, she went. I got to meet her in person. She was at the 2016 Battered Mothers Custody Conference. She came and she did one of the classes.
No.
So I met her in person.
That's a different person. Not Linda Wigand. Not Linda Wigand.
Okay.
That's a different person. It has to be somebody different. By 2016, it's everybody. At this point, we believe she's dead. There is no actual concrete evidence, but she is.
Uh-huh.
No, but she apparently, the last time she surfaced, she told her son that she had a brain tumor and that she didn't have long to live, and nobody has heard from her since. And the general belief is that she has passed away. So, if you can imagine, there were experts who supported her allegations. The evidence was overwhelming. And the same is true of the Liberty versus Liberty case. You know, they had photographs of the child's anus. They had Dr. Eli Neuberger of the Harvard Medical School, an expert in child sexual abuse, who confirmed that the sexual abuse had taken place, and the courts simply ignored it. They simply ignored it. So, and so this is standard in terms of the child sexual abuse cases that happen. You will never win those because they will just simply, they will manipulate court proceedings in order to just remove the evidence out of the record.
Yeah. Yeah, I know why it's so difficult to find Lori Handerhan. I know that to some extent, for her own personal safety, she has to kind of keep a low profile. I'm looking at page 97. Pardon?
Right.
But somebody else was saying something, and pardon?
I'm certain that she does. I mean, there is no way that Linda Wigand, whose case was so overwhelming, that she was treated in the way that she was treated without a certain level of, you know, a lot of people coming together to eliminate her, which I believe is what happened, you know. And so anybody who speaks out against child sexual abuse in a very powerful way, particularly with this book, I think that they're putting themselves at risk. And I know that Francesca, to a certain extent, with her outspokenness, you know, that's taking on a risk as well. You know?
Oh, yeah, I know. And you know, so we all need to pray for Francesca. Francesca, I just have to say again that I'm really so proud of you. And you've actually given me a lot of courage to come back on the radio every week. Are you still there? I know she is. I know she's there. Somebody said something while Elizabeth was talking, and I'm a little bit worried that I didn't get to hear what somebody was saying. And whoever was saying something. Okay. All right. So,
all right. But I keep muting because I don't want to interrupt anybody.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, I'm going to read just another little section from Lori Handerhan's book. On page 97, As I have argued, the domination of white racist sexist men over our legal system presents a real barrier to efforts to halt America's child rape epidemic. And then on page 99, I'm going to flip over to the next part that I put yellow on. It says, she says, when you see these emails, it's just a swamp of misogyny, racism, homophobia, and white privilege. It taints everybody, especially in the judicial branch. You get the impression that every white male office holder in the state is a creep. There's all kinds of things. Who was saying this? Bruce Ledowitz, Associate Dean of Academic Affairs and Law Professor at Duke. I don't know how to pronounce this. It's French. It's probably someplace in Canada. I don't know. Duquesne University. Yeah, that's got to be in Canada.
Duquesne?
Yeah, something like I spelled it. Somebody will figure it out. So we also know about who was that? Kathleen Kane. Wasn't she the attorney general from Pennsylvania that had everybody just kind of dogpiled on her? She hired a law firm to conduct a full analysis of the emails and release a public report. Long before the report was released, Kane held press conferences and released the emails in small batches, including more than 1,500 emails sent by a Supreme Court judge. The white men in power hit back hard. Kane was arrested. Her law license was revoked by the very men she was exposing. Eventually, she was sentenced in October 2016 to 10 to 23 months in jail, followed by 8 years of probation for her, quote, political ego, unquote. Convicted on 2 felony counts of perjury and 7 charges of lying and abusing the power of her office. Although 2 Supreme Court judges lost their positions, none of the men involved in undermining America's justice system by displaying blatantly threatening behavior toward women and minorities on government computers were criminally charged. I wanted to read that because, you know, we really need to give credit to the people that we respect that are really doing a good job and speaking up for women. That's why I'm thinking if we could persuade these people, the whole point of having an organization like the National Organization for Women is that if every chapter president all over the United States decides to get together and speak up for the women and the children, if they all decide to do it together, they've already got an organization in place to help everyone. No one is going to be able to put down the whole entire National Organization for Women. No one is going to. They have chapter presidents all over the United States. They're already established. The issue is just getting people to stop cutting people slack who aren't doing their job. It is a job. I don't care if it's a nonprofit. If you're the National Organization for Women, then be for women. Be for women. Be for us. Be for those of us who are trying to protect children. I mean, be willing to open your eyes to these things that make you feel slimy in places you'll never be able to wash. Okay? Because this is the only way. If you open your eyes to the fact that children are being raped daily and nightly, okay? If I can just be so bold as to say that when the 80s rolled around, yeah, I've been hoofing it for a while. The 80s rolled around, and I started to get upset because my grandmother was one of the founding members with Betty Friedan of the National Organization for Women. Nobody remembers my grandmother because she was Republican. Oh, well. Elizabeth, I've shown you the book, right? So,
yeah.
But I started to get really, really discouraged because, everybody started thinking that the feminist movement was really the lesbian movement, and I knew that that wasn't me. I have a funny story I can tell about it, but I'm not going to tell it tonight because we only have an hour. We only have 12 minutes left. But,
it is very bad.
I think,
but now,
pardon?
It is just disgraceful that NOW is doing nothing for family court victims and victims of child sexual abuse. They just are sitting on their hands, and they just don't care. They do
not care.
And this,
we've got gay marriage. We've got gay marriage now. Okay, so gay people, lesbians are allowed to get married now. And the alternative lifestyle, that ship has sailed. There are no alternatives for children who are sexually abused. There are no alternatives. There is no alternative lifestyle. what's on the menu? Daddy's dick every night. I'm sorry, but you know what? Got people of the alternative lifestyle. Let's have some alternatives for battered and sexually abused children. Okay?
The only alternative is to be... The only alternative is to put... Yes.
Yeah.
The only alternative is foster care, and then 9 times out of 10, you'll probably be sexually abused there, too. So...
Yeah,
right.
And that was something
I
was worried about, but...
It was just a question of who is doing the abusing. Is it going to be dad or foster dad or somebody else in the foster home? Or
that's why you got to strike the evil at the root, and the root is the pedophilia. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you get a hold of if you get a hold of this book Epidemic by Laurie Handrihan, you'll see that really that the issue is even like in the military, in the police, in
mm-hmm.
the government. It's everywhere, and that's what you really need to attack. You need to attack the pedophilia and the child rape epidemic, because
mm-hmm.
Because it's all through everything. If you look through some of the other chapters, you'll find out that the family courts are ruled by judges who protect pedophiles, prosecutors who
mm-hmm.
protect pedophiles. Have you gotten to that part? The legal profession, chapter 6. It's on page 95. And that was one of the first, as soon as I got the book, I opened it to chapter 6. It's a very short chapter.
Mm-hmm.
It only goes to 108. And then it's got tons of notes in it. Sometimes it's fellow lawyers. Sometimes it's fellow lawyers that harbor a dark secret or defend pedophile behavior. Prosecutors. She tells
mm-hmm.
stories. She gives examples.
Mm-hmm.
This is the best book to start with. If you want to find alternatives for children who are living in the dark, who want to be able to speak about, because right now, women can't report sexual abuse of children because we get punished by the family court. We either lose custody, or in my case, because my ex-husband needed free child care and he knew he could get it from me, I was allowed to hold on to my daughter as long as I was caring for her for free, and nobody was going to make him pay any child support. That was fine with him. But then the minute she, when she was 11, he abducted her out of school. And that was actually the other allegation. So they either allege that you're mentally unfit and endangering the child, or they allege that you're about to flee the state or the country with the child and prevent dad from seeing the kid. That's the other allegation.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is a boilerplate. This is a boilerplate that the man drafts up, checks off a few boxes and signs, and the minute it's on the judge's desk, it's turbo habeas, the judge signs it, and you lose custody if you're a mom. You lose custody immediately. No questions asked. You should have seen the sham trials I had where I wasn't actually allowed to present evidence or cross-examine my ex-husband or present witnesses or anything like that. They just, that basically the judge punched the clock and they asked me a bunch of bogus questions that had nothing to do with the case. But it's just simply astounding. And you know this, Francesca. You know from what you went through in your book, Punish for Protecting. All right, we have
my ex-husband wasn't even in court, and we still were tussling for custody. He had taken the kids to Germany, which is a felony.
Right.
And the judge said that he was tired of women having babies and then divorcing their ex-husband so they could live on their alimony and child support and eat bonbons and watch soap operas all day.
Unbelievable. Yeah, well, now they have men demanding women pay them child support to rape their own children. That's the
My ex-husband
really
did
wanna...
that too. He tried getting me to pay child support. He had brought it up in court
mm-hmm.
when we had
mm-hmm.
child custody in another county in
right.
child support.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
and
crazy.
You find this happening to it. Yeah, I mean, I can count. I'd have to borrow everyone's fingers and toes to count the women I know on Facebook who were forced to pay child support because their ex-husband
mm-hmm.
was wealthy
right.
and paid off judges. But they took custody away and it's just absolutely incredible. But yeah, I mean, if you want to fight the evil, you need to strike it at the root. And the root is
mm-hmm.
institutionalized pedophilia in the family court system, in the police, in the military. And it's in this book, and it's a very short book. How many pages is this book? This book is not even 200 pages. It's 169 pages, 170 pages. So yeah, and it's like, I don't know, it's an $18 book. Just get it before somebody takes it off the market, before somebody gets angry and takes it off the market.
Mm-hmm.
Snap yourself up a copy of this book. Oh my goodness. Yeah, because like I said, I want to memorize parts of it. You know, Anne, I just want to thank you for calling in. I'm so thrilled that I, you know, that I was able to meet you finally. I would love for Cecibel, if you could get her and if you could get Harold to come on my show. It's going to be every Monday night. I might get a two-hour show after this. They like to give me an hour the first week and then boost
mm-hmm.
it up to 2 hours. We'll see what happens. But I'm going to start having it at 9 p.m. on Mondays, 9 p.m. Eastern time. So if ask her if she'd like to come on my show. I'd love to have her on a future episode, and I'd love to have you back. If you would please come back. We didn't hear very much
sure.
of your story. Oh, thank you. And Francesca, oh, my gosh, I feel so honored. You are, like, such a famous person in my book. You were like, I couldn't believe that you actually came on my show that first time, a little half hour show. She showed up and I was knocked out that you actually came on my talk show. And I would like to hear more about what you're doing. I'm so thrilled about this thing that you did in West Virginia. I was so excited. I was watching the interviews. Anybody who gets a chance, go to Punish for Protecting. It's a page I made for her book. Oh, my God, and so beautiful, just incredible. Just keep up the good work, Francesca. I'm just so thrilled. Elizabeth, I want to thank you for calling in. You've been amazing. Elizabeth was, yeah,
you're
the best. And you've been. I'm gonna play this song that Francesca gave me. I'm going to have to sign back in to get it. But I just like to say thank you to Elizabeth. Elizabeth was on my radio show on Mother's Day, remember? on Mother's Day in 2016, we were live at the Battered Mothers Custody Conference, and oh my goodness, you were on. I was so tired, and you were on the, and that was a 2 hour show. I couldn't believe it, and so
mm-hmm. That was fun.
I am going to play this song because I said I'd play Chilla's song. And I want to thank you again for giving me this. Let's see if I can play it. Let's see if it's loud enough. And thank you definitely. I'd love to talk to her, and maybe she'll let me play at least parts of it for the shows that I do in the future.
It was written for me, so I have permission, and she'll be thrilled. She'll be
thrilled.
Oh, good.
That is so cool. Let me see if I can find it. Where is it? It's like, okay, anybody want to say anything else before I cue up the music?
I just want to say thank you to Elizabeth. I want to say thank you to you as well for having me on, and looking forward to reading your book as well. So I'm going to try to go get that right now, actually.
Awesome. Yeah, please
okay,
come back.
Then.
Please come back.
Absolutely. Okay,
been
thank
good.
You.
Okay, you guys have a good night, and I'll talk to you again soon. Have an awesome night. Okay, here's the song. Let's see. My iMac is rode hard and put up wet, so if it plays, I'll be thrilled. Hold on a second. Here we go. If I run over. Here we go. Let me play it. Hit play. All right. All right.
Yeah.